Let us turn to the book of Deuteronomy and chapter 32. Deuteronomy 32, and we read from verse 7. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel, for the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance. He found him in a desert land, and in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him. We are not used to thinking of Moses as a singer, a prophet and a leader, yes, but not so much a composer of songs. And yet, in Exodus 15 and verse 1, following the wonderful deliverance at the Red Sea, Moses led the people in a song of triumph, of praise to God. Sing ye unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. And then there is Psalm 90, which is a song of Moses. And here in Deuteronomy 31, and from verse 30, what we have just read is part of a song that Moses sang. Deuteronomy 31, verse 30, Moses spake in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. And then chapter 32, give ear, O ye heavens, and I will speak. And hear, O earth, the words of my mouth, and so on. This chapter 32 records the last of these sacred songs of Moses, and it is all about the character of God, his kind dealings with Israel, their ungrateful behavior, and what will happen if they turn away from him. It's for Israel to sing when Moses is gone, for their encouragement and for their warning. We need both, don't we, to be reminded of all the wonderful things the Lord has done for us, and also to be cautioned lest we forget him and what will happen if we do. And our text this morning comes in part of that song that celebrates the Lord's love and kindness to his people. Verses 11 and 12 of Deuteronomy 32. As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, bearing them on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead him, that's Israel, and there was no strange God with him. You can see that this inspired song likens the Lord to a mother eagle, encouraging her eaglets to fly. It's a tender picture and an instructive one. Moses in the desert of Midian would have probably seen this. You remember he led the flock around that wilderness, came to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, And he may well have seen the eagle's nest and how that the parent bird would force sometimes the eaglets to leave the nest, and how the eaglets would be pitched out and have to use their wings to fly. And if they were struggling, the parent bird would swoop beneath with its mighty wingspan and catch the eaglet, dropping down, bear it up, and start again, in order that finally the eaglet would learn to fly on its own. And using this picture, he describes all that the Lord did when God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt and led them through the wilderness to where they are now on the borders of the Promised Land. And lest it be thought to be a nice piece of history and a nice picture of the Lord that was for Israel and not much more, remember, whenever we read the Old Testament, read it through the lens of Romans 15, verse 4. Whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. And that is telling us that what we have here, as in any part of the Old Testament, is as much for God's people to the end of time as it was for the Lord's people at that time. So let us look then at verses 11 and 12 as we stand on the threshold of a new year, and as we seek a word of encouragement from God's word, let's look at this picture and let's seek to discover what the Lord would say to us today and for 2015. And first of all, there is in here something about our changes. As the eagle stirreth up her nest. Eaglets high up in the aerie or the nest, usually two or three of them, and they are secure and snug in there. But the time comes for the next stage of life when they must fly. You can't be a young eagle in a nest always, much as you might like to be. And sometimes, in order for that next stage of things to happen, the eaglet has to be literally tipped out of the nest, as an eagle stirreth up her nest. It's not to hurt the eaglet, but it's to be the making of it. And it shows us how to view changes in our lives. The new year of 2015 will have continuity, most probably, but may have some changes as well. Welcome in some cases, less welcome in others. But what is it that applies to all the changes? Well, this, that God is to us like this parent bird, and that he is the one who stirs up. He is the one who forces us out. He is the one who is in charge of things, knowing full well that it's for our development, progress, maturity, and blessing. You can apply it to Israel's great change when they were brought out of Egypt. They were settled in the nest of Egypt. Although there was suffering because they were in slavery, it was not all miserable. When they were complaining about their lot in the desert, in Numbers 11, verse 5, they said, "We remember the wonderful food we had, the flesh pots of Egypt, and the onions, and the garlics, and the melons, and so on, much better than what we've got here in Egypt." They were, in a strange kind of way, perversely resigned to those circumstances. It is a strange thing, but it is true that you can be in a most unhappy situation and get so used to it that you are almost settled and you almost feel secure in it. And you almost don't want it to change. You remember when our Lord came to the man at the pool of Bethesda? 38 years. He was helpless there at the pool and no help to even get to that water in time to be healed. And what did the Lord Jesus say? Wilt thou be made whole? Do you want me to intervene? Do you want me to change everything for you? Or are you content to remain like this? It's a perverse and a strange thing, isn't it? But there is a kind of security in continuity, even if it's the worst situation. And we don't conceive of anything better, anything different. But the Lord does. And you see, if they had been left in Egypt, they would have continued there. However, God intervened. He did because, of course, there were ancient promises, weren't there? Prophecies. In Genesis 15, verse 14, God promised Abraham, looking ahead to Abraham's seed, the people of Israel in Egypt, they must serve them and then afterwards be brought out with much substance. The reference to the Exodus. And of course, all the future purposes of God. They must come out of Egypt. They must settle in the land of Canaan. There must be the land of Israel in order for God to bring his son into the world and so on. All of that. And so they can't stay in Egypt. They can't remain in the nest. They've got to get out. And as an eagle stirreth up her nest, so God stirred things up for them. And of course, unwelcome though in some senses it was, reluctant though it was for them to see what was happening and to cooperate with God's dealings, it was the best thing that happened to them. It made them free. It gave them a future. Although an arduous journey with trials and troubles, it gave them a land of their own and a glorious future in God's purposes. And so, dear friends, whatever might be the case for us, we can be sure that God knows best. You see, we have our nests as well, don't we? We have the nest, we might say, of our continuance and our security. We like things to remain the way they are. And yet, the Lord has a great future in his purposes that we don't know about. These eaglets in the nest, they were confined, but they felt safe. But there was a wide world of life in front of them, which was the next stage. And sometimes, you see, the Lord appoints changes. Here we have no continuing city. Not change for change's sake, but for progress and led in to God's purposes. We think of the happy family of children growing up. But you can't stay like that always. You can't remain in the home forever, can you? One by one, you leave the nest. Education, work, leave to get married. It's hard for siblings. The happier the home, the harder it is to bear these changes. It's a tension, isn't it? We want things to stay as they've always been. And yet we know that there's another set of relationships, there's another home to become established as we leave home, get married, have a family of our own, if the Lord blesses. It's hard for siblings for that to happen. I tell you, it's harder for parents. Harder for parents to see it happening, one by one, leaving and getting fewer and fewer until you're left on your own, just as when you were first married. These are not easy changes, but these are appointed changes, aren't they? It's all part of progress and going on. And the thing is, we can embrace them, not just humanly speaking because they're necessary, but divinely speaking because God is in them and God is over all. The time comes when our father dies, our mother dies, and that which has been foundational to us makes our world shift somewhat. The time comes maybe when we lose a loved one and we are bereaved and everything changes. Then there is death for us. The ultimate stirring up of the nest. And God says, arise, depart. This is not your rest, for it is polluted. And we exchange earth for heaven. All these changes, and who knows what of these may well happen in 2015 for any of us. But the point is, dear friends, it's the eagle stirring up the nest. It's the Lord bringing about these changes. It's God dedicated, devoted to our best interests. It's not an end, but a beginning. It's not loss, it's gain. It's not unfortunate, it's privilege. All these things. The little eaglet may not think it so, holding on to life in coziness and security. The parent bird knows it is so. And so it must be stirred up, it must be tipped out, and it must fly for itself. And dear friends, these things are of the Lord. Look at verse 11. As the eagle stirreth up her nest, verse 12, so the Lord alone. His loving dealings. It would be harmful, it would be a loss, if it were to remain as it's always been. All part of his plan for our lives. And we believe and we know that his way is best. Our changes, whatever changes come, welcome or unwelcome, not one of them can come of itself. Not one can happen on its own. Not one can be the result of an unfortunate combination of circumstances that we had prefer to avoid. No, no. As the eagle, so the Lord. And then the second point is this. Not only our changes, but our training. As the eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them up on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead, and so on. And that word fluttereth over her young. The word fluttereth is the same word as in Genesis chapter 1 verse 2, where it says that the Spirit of God moved over the face of the waters. Literally, hovered, brooded. It's the tender, determined action of a parent bird. And if you see this rightly, you can say in the words of Letitia Ann Waring, Father, I know that all my life is portioned out for me. The changes that are sure to come, I do not fear to see. I ask thee for a quiet mind, intent on pleasing thee. It's that godly recognition that he is there for our good in these changes, and that there are lessons to learn. You see, this is the language of flight training, isn't it? An eagle stirring up her nest, fluttering over her young, swooping beneath, bearing them up, taking them back, letting them go again, making sure that they fly for themselves. Those wings are flight ready. Those wing feathers are developed. There is strength enough. The stage is right. They must fly for themselves. They will have to fly. And the next step, to become a real eagle. And you see, whatever the Lord does in terms of leading us out in new experiences, there's always the safety, isn't there? Notice the language, you see. Spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, bearing them on her wings. If it should be that the poor little thing is struggling and can't get the wings moving and working so that it can ride the air currents and fly for itself, it's not fatal, because the parent bird will swoop beneath and the 7-foot wingspan will catch the descending eagle, bear it up, and then let it go again. There is safety. And dear friends, when you venture forth for God, there is safety. When you begin any new change, when you have to embrace some new departure, something that happens in life, God is underneath to bear you up and to keep you safe in those circumstances. Sometimes we have taken a hit with something which we say has made the bottom of our world drop out, and we have felt so totally let down. And we have fallen, and yet God has caught us and held us up, and we have been safe. Underneath are the everlasting arms to change the figure. We are always safe, even in the unwelcome providences. Has it not been the case that we have learned more and discovered more of God's love, and known God more deeply and fully in times of radical change, loss, exchanging one situation for another? Has it not been that God has come near, and we have found how much we're loved, and how much God can be to us? With the aching void, with the wistful longing that it might be back again as it was. No, we exchange the confined nest for the skies, and we fly, we grow as Christians. You've got examples in the Bible of it, haven't you? Think of Noah, for instance. What a change there. A happy little family of 8 souls, godly, righteous before God, seeking to live out their lives in their generation. And then what an amazing thing to be told that God is going to destroy the world, and that this one man, Noah, and his family are going to be saved, and that Noah must get busy building an ark, and he must preach to that generation righteousness. My, who would want such a calling? You can imagine him, humanly speaking, saying, can't I just be left to live out my life and look after my family and earn my living and serve God at home where I am and be unknown and just pass my days in this world and be taken to heaven? Ah, that's the nest. It might well be that we would like that. But no, when the will of God calls us to some change, something, we must go forward. And Noah served his generation, didn't he, by the will of God? What about Abraham, the nest of the Ur of Chaldees, and his wealthy family, it would seem, worshipping idols, a stranger to God? And then the Lord, we read, Acts chapter 7, the God of glory appeared unto Abraham, and there was the overwhelming interference of God, whereby he was called out to know the true and living God savingly, and called out of Ur of the Chaldees to a land he didn't know about, but he had to venture in faith, not knowing whither he went, but knowing the one with whom he went. And God led him, and God defended him, and upheld and supported him. And wasn't all well? And then Jacob, what a turbulent life. Tossed out of the nest at Hebron when he deceived his father and angered his brother Esau, and had to flee for his life to Paddan Aram with all the promises of God that the Lord would be with him and bring him back home again one day. And then he thinks he's marrying happily, marrying the love of his life, only to find he's married her sister instead. And he's got to work a further 7 years to get his Rachel finally. Landed with two wives, two handmaids, squabbling, a very dysfunctional family to have to endure, and all the ups and downs. What a life. What a calling. And then the 12 sons born, and some of them very unsavory characters, but all to build the tribes of Israel, of which nation the Christ would come into the world. And see how, with these changes, Jacob was flying, a prince with God. The Lord knows what he's doing. You think of Joseph, a lad of 17. It's normal to think of being 17 that you've got a little bit of time left in your home. At that age, only a teenager after all. And yet suddenly everything changes. And what an unwelcome change. Brothers try and murder him, and instead sell him as a slave, and he's taken to Egypt. Sold on to Potiphar. Made to work as a household slave. Unjustly imprisoned for being upright and righteous. All time low. What has happened? He's exchanged the nest for this furnace of affliction. But no, the Lord was with him. And it was flight training. It was spiritual growth. He's growing into a godly man, knowing the Lord's sufficiency and help, serving his generation, fulfilling what God was calling him to be. Moses himself, the unwelcome news that he must be Israel's deliverer and leader, every excuse he could think of, not wanting to go before Pharaoh, terrified of the prospect of having to confront this great monarch and command him to let the people of Israel go. Oh, clinging to the nest. The Lord stirring him up. And out he went. It's interesting when we're reading these chapters, Lord's Day mornings in the book of Exodus, have you noticed how that in the beginning, Moses uses Aaron as his mouthpiece, speaking to Pharaoh. And Aaron speaks on behalf of Moses. And by the end of it, as the plagues are coming, one by one, toward the end, it's Moses who's speaking to Pharaoh, very authoritatively and very courageously, and even getting righteously angry and threatening Pharaoh. You see what God can do? He can make us act in ways that we never thought we'd be able to act. Never thought we could do that. Timid Moses, man of uncircumcised lips, can't speak well, slow of tongue. And now he's commanding the greatest man in the world. The great world leader. That he'd better let the people of Israel go, or else the Lord will deal with him. Well, you see, that's growth, isn't it? He's changed from a cringing little eaglet in the nest to a mighty eagle with great prowess and power of flight and command. We never know what we can be and what we can do until the Lord leads us and has charge of our lives. Many Christians have only ever found what gifts they have and what wonderful things they can do, what mighty contribution they can make when they become Christians, or when it is that changes happen and the Lord puts them in just the right circumstances for these things to be developed and to come out. It's like that with our career, isn't it? Like that in marriage, like all these things. We sometimes are apprehensive about these big life events, but God would have us to be at peace. And if it is that you think maybe that this year is going to be a big year for you in some way or other, don't be fearful. But remember that God is in these things, and that the Lord will have his way and lead you into his best and be with you in it. And Israel, of course, as we've seen, out of Egypt toward the promised land. And one more example, which we're going to hear more about this evening, God willing, that little maid in Naaman's home, 2 Kings chapter 5, the little maid that was captured on a Syrian raid and taken from Israel, and she became a little servant in Naaman's home and a lady's maid to Naaman's wife. We don't know her name, don't know her age, don't know her family. The Lord knew all that. And the Lord brought her out of the nest of her comfortable home. After all, she may have only been a little girl of, say, 12, 13, maybe. Who would want to leave home at that age? Who would want to be plucked from one's own country to a foreign country and have to be a servant in a great general's home and his family? But you see, God knew what he was doing, because that little girl said those words when a great cloud of sorrow was over the home because General Naaman had leprosy. And those sweet little words, "Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." And then a great reaction, and one link in a chain after another, to the healing of Naaman and the converting, it would seem, of Naaman to the worship of the true God. Ah, how wonderfully God works. As someone has said, every event that befalls us has a meaning beyond itself. See, when you believe in the providence of God over all and in all, without exception, every event that befalls us has a meaning beyond itself. A meaning you can't see at the time, but a meaning God will unfold as he's training us to trust him and to fly and to go on with him. Oh, it is safe to venture with God. You're born on wings. That's the very language that was used by God himself when he brought the people of Israel out of Egypt. In Exodus 19 and verse 4, he says to them, "Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself." They were safe. Can't be safe. Safer than that. As long as we are with him, we are as secure as in the nest. His supportive help and preservation. It's interesting that in Psalm 68 and verse 28, we read this, where the psalmist states this wonderful truth, "Thy God hath commanded thy strength." And then he prays, "Strengthen, O God, that which thou hast wrought for us." Thy God hath commanded thy strength. When the godly Fred Mitchell was exercised about taking up the post of director of the China Inland Mission, I think it was in the 1940s in this country, he was naturally filled with a sense of his unworthiness, inadequacy, as every godly, humble man would. You know, there is no carnal ambition in godly people. If there is a call to something, there is a shrinking back, although a desire to do the will of God. And this dear man, he was greatly exercised. Should he commit his family to the move that it would involve? Take up this work? Leave his career and business in pharmacy? And he came across this verse, as God would have it, of course. "Thy God hath commanded thy strength." And so he thought to himself, well, if God has commanded me to do this work, he'll command that the strength will be given to me. And that concluded it for him. And he ventured forth, and he was in that post and served the Lord very wonderfully till his home call in 1953, actually, through that plane crash, that Comet airliner that crashed in that year. But those were years of great blessing and great usefulness. And if God has appointed certain things for you, if God has commanded them, he'll command the strength necessary to be given you. If God says, go, he says, I will impart the enabling proportionate to your need. Thy God hath commanded thy strength. Strength for the day. Wisdom, enabling, sufficiency at all times. And notice how the verse goes on. It takes the form of a prayer. Then strengthen, O God, that which thou hast wrought for us. See, this is how the two work together, isn't it? The promise of God commanded our strength, and then the prayer of the believer, do that which thou hast promised. Strengthen me. They both go together. It's in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 24, isn't it? Faithful is he which doth call you, who also will do it. If he tips you out of the nest, stirs you up, then he will fly beneath and catch you on wings and bear you up and support you and strengthen you for whatever is the need. And we learn from this. Learn about God. Learn about ourselves, learn about the world, learn about the church, learn the word of God. All these things are instructive to us. It's growing, it's becoming stronger and more mature. Being born on his wings, learning to fly. It's our training. The changes of life, sometimes the worst of changes, as we would see them, are often the best of disciplines and the best of teachers. Our training. And let's see one more thing as we conclude. It's the changes, the training, and it's the sufficiency. You'll notice in verse 12, "So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him." All they needed was the Lord to be this to them, and no other. In the earlier part of Deuteronomy chapter 2 and verse 7, Moses can review the 40 years and he can say this: "For the Lord thy God hath blessed thee in all the works of thy hand. He knoweth thy walking through this great wilderness these 40 years. The Lord thy God hath been with thee. Thou hast lacked nothing." Nothing at all. How many Christian families can say that? Two Christians get married as young people just beginning. Money isn't plentiful. It is a struggle. But they tithe their income and they give to the Lord, and they're generous and they put the Lord first. And lo and behold, it's amazing how far a joint of meat will go in its slices, and how far bread can be made to go, and how long clothes for the little ones can last. And lo and behold, from sources unknown, how the Lord brings in supplies. Just when there is a big bill, the Lord lays it upon the heart of a dear friend who knows nothing of the situation and yet is strangely moved to push a check through the letterbox for exactly the amount of that bill. And how do you explain that? It's the working of God. The Lord alone did lead him. We've seen it again and again in the life of George Muller, haven't we? He and his orphans sit down to a breakfast and there's no food. And then there's a knock at the door, and a baker comes with a cartload of bread. It's been dropped on the road by accident. It's no good to be sold, but he thinks that maybe Mr. Muller might want it for his orphans. And there comes bread plentiful. Well, God did it. No other God. No strange God. The Lord alone did lead him. When we look up to God, the Lord answers prayer, moves various instruments and means to come in for his people. The issue for the future is not what might happen and how am I going to make out, and suppose this takes place or that takes place. And no, that's not the issue. The issue is, am I going to trust the Lord? Am I going to believe that he's in charge? Am I going to believe that I'm one of his? And that he is the one who oversees the whole process of my development and growing and going forward for the future. There are sometimes perplexities, aren't there? The Lord alone did lead him. Oh, sometimes that leading can be mysterious. You notice in verse 10 of this chapter 32 of Deuteronomy, he found him in a desert land, in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about. Oh, those leadings about. Sometimes things happen to us, don't they? And it seems as if we're going off on a tangent. And then other times it seems we're going back. Other things happen. How do you make sense of it? What reason? What purpose? Leading about the disappointments, the debacles that fall apart and come to nothing, the dismaying providences. But you can add to that phrase in verse 10, he led him about, what we sang earlier in Psalm 107, verse 7. He led them forth by the right way. He may lead you about. It'll always be the right way. You only need him to be there. Whatever 2015 may bring, it will bring what he appoints, what he will be with us for, what he will bless to us, the stirrings up, the changes, the learning, the training, the lessons, the development and growth, all these things. Trust him. The Lord alone is all that we need. No strange God, no other resort, no other refuge, no other help but God. Say with the words of Psalm 73, 24, 25, Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none that I desire upon earth beside thee. This is a song. This is something to sing about. May we sing it, dear friends, through this year. May we glory in God. May we look forward as we look to him and believe the future is as bright as his promises and as his faithfulness. May it be so for the glory of his name. Let us sing together hymn 754.